sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavati tamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Verse 81. Svato paroksha jivasya, svato paroksha jivasya, brahmatvam abhivanchataha, brahmatvam abhivanchataha, nishet siddha parokshatvam, nishet siddha parokshatvam, iti yuktir mahatyaho, iti yuktir mahatyaho. Svataha aparoksha jivasya brahmatvam abhivanchataha nashet siddha aparokshatvam iti yuktihi mahati aho. Says for the jiva, swataha aparoksha jivasya, for the jiva, which is aparoksha, of its own, from its own accord, it itself is aparoksha, as we did in the meditation, it's aparoksha, it's self-evident, it's self-shining, it's not, it's known but not through any type of objectification, it's not known through sense perception or any other type of objectification. Nor is it slipping away from you to have to reach to know. No, it's aparoksha because it's svata siddha, because it is consciousness itself. So that is the truth of the jiva. There really is no jiva. The jiva is Brahman. It's not like there's a jiva and then there's some Brahman over there. The truth of the jiva is Brahman. The Atma is Brahman. The truth of the jiva is the Atma, is the self. And the self is Brahman. So here he says, for the jiva, which is aparoksha and self-evident, svataha aparoksha jivasya, brahmatvam abhivanchataha, present participle. For a person who is desiring brahmatvam, wanting to gain, to desire, having a desire, a longing, abhivanchataha means person who has a longing. They have a longing for brahmatvam, for the aparoksha jiva to be Brahman. Right? A longing for what? Longing for the jiva, which is itself aparoksha, means immediately self-evident. Longing for that to be Brahman, the brahmatvam. Okay? So for such a person, nishet siddha aparokshatvam iti. For that person, the aparoksha, which is established, siddha aparokshatvam, nishet is destroyed, so to speak. See, look, if my atma, if myself is aparoksha, right, it is immediate. And I am now searching for Brahman. The aparoksha atma, which is the me, so it's that self, which is the truth of the jiva. The jiva is searching, longing for Brahman. In that longing for Brahman, the aparoksha jnanam, the siddha, the aparoksha tvam of the jiva, the direct, immediate, self-evident being of the jiva, of the individual, that is as though that perishes. What it means, it goes away, it's gone. For that person, it's there, of course. But for all practical purposes, the person is looking for that out here. They're looking for that in Brahman, and Brahman is something that's being objectified. So in that very act of searching for the infinite self, just think about it. The infinite self is searching for the infinite self. The jiva, whose being is the infinite self, is searching for Brahman, is searching for the infinite self. And in that act, longing for it, and in that act of longing, to gain enlightenment, to find the Infinite Self, the Infinite Self is as though perishes, right? Because the Infinite Self is just sitting there as me, and I'm trying to find it out here. So, that's what they mean by nishet there. Nishet siddha aparoksha pramiti yuktihi mahati. He says, what great logic. Yeah. What great logic this is. You know, for the aparoksha, for it doesn't make any sense at all, is what he's saying. Remember, we're in this, still in this section about trying to understand the Mahavakya. And the objector is that the Mahavakya gives paroksha jnana. Right? Now he's going into the Mahavakya gives only paroksha jnana. We've finished this argument now. Can't give paroksha jnana. Must give a paroksha jnana. They went through a whole argument. But now we're looking at it a little differently. What great logic it would be, right? He's being sarcastic. Mahati yuktihi, what wonderful logic. He goes, aho. Aho. Yuktihi mahati. What wonderful logic, what great logic, you know? Just think about it. He says, just think about it, what you're saying. That this self, which is self-evident, right, aparoksha, is searching for brahmatvam. And in that very search, though, the self is lost. Right? So he's making this argument now. So let's do the next verse. He has another one that builds on this.
Vriddham ishtavato moolam apinashtam mati drisham apinashtam mati drisham laukikam vachanam sartham laukikam vachanam sartham sampannam tvat prasadatah sampannam tvat prasadatah.
Still being so sarcastic. He says, laukikam
vriddhim ishta vattaha moolam api nashtam iti idrisham laukikam vachanam sartham sampannam tvat prasadataha.
He says there's a laukikam vachanam, that is like it's idrisham laukikam vachanam. There's like a popular saying. Laukikam means worldly, of the world. Vachanam means statement. So we'd say in English, we'd say there's this popular statement that goes like this. It's ishtam idrisham, which is like this, idrisham. Okay?
Vriddham ishtavattaha
says, for a person who is, the person who is seeking to increase something. Vriddham means to grow, wants to increase something. Ishtavattaha, for a person who has sought, he had sought to increase something, moolam api nashtam. For that person who's really worked, he sought to desire to increase something. In the process, moolam api nashtam. The root itself, the moola, what he had, what he, the moola. The moola is the very root, the thing that was that was the core of it. That also is lost. He's seeking to increase. And in the very act of vriddham, of seeking, wanting, you know, desiring more. So he desired more, but in the act of desiring more, he destroyed, the moola itself was destroyed. And so it's just a popular saying, I guess, you know. And it's similar here. You're seeking Brahman. Brahman is the infinite self. Right? Brahman means the self which is infinite. It's the Brahmatvam. You're trying to make yourself infinite. The Atma, you know, desiring Brahmatvam. I am desiring to be infinite. Right? So in my desiring to be infinite, I'm desiring to increase. Right? But in that desiring to increase, I'm losing the root, the moola, what is actually there. In ignorance, losing it in terms of ignorance. So just like that popular saying, he says, sartam sampannam, it gains meaning here. So this must be a well-known saying that they just used in Vyavahara, you know?
Yeah, everybody knew it.
Yeah. This well-known, this saying that everybody knows in Vyavahara, this makes sense here. This is what's happening here, you know? And the person whose desire to increase loses in the process the very mula what they had. What they had is destroyed. So that sampanna means that gains saritam, that gains meaningfulness here, this popular saying. And then he says, Twat prasadataha, from your grace. Blessed by you, twat is you, prasada, right? Prasadataha is fifth case. So blessed by your, by your grace means by your wonderful unfoldment, by your wonderful logic, blessed by you, this popular saying becomes meaningful. Now, you can say, you know, Shankara, in Shankara's Bhasha also, he has a lot of personality. Sometimes he's joking, sometimes he's sarcastic, but it's all, you know, it's all kind of an Indian flavor. So anyway. He's now going to explain how this, give another purva paksha and kind of get into more of an explanation of this on a different level. Antakarana sambhinna, antakarana sambhinna, bodho jivo parokshatam, bodho jivo parokshatam, arhatyupadisan sadbhavat, arhatyupadi sadbhavat, natu brahmanupaditaha, natu brahmanupaditaha. This is a purva paksha. This is an objection. Antakarana, sambhinna, bodhaha, jivaha, aparokshatam, arhati, upadi, sadbhavat, na tu, brahma, anupadhitaha. Antakarana sambhinna bodha. Bodha here is consciousness. The bodha, the consciousness, the knowledge in capital K, knowledge, consciousness. Mixed, sambhinna means mixed. Antakarana sambhinna bodha. The consciousness mixed with the antakarana. That is the jiva. The jiva, which is consciousness mixed with the antakarana. The antakarana is the upadi. So just like take your mind, my mind is a conscious entity. So it's a combination of consciousness and the antakarana and the mind. That makes the jiva. So this jiva, arhati, it is capable of aparokshata, of being aparoksha. This is the purva paksha. This is the objection. He says, this jiva, the one who's mixed, a mix of the consciousness, really of the atma, of the consciousness and the antakarana, this jiva is capable of being self-evident. And he says, why? Upadi sadbhavat. Because of the existence of the upadi, because there's a conditioning adjunct there, the antakarana, the mind, it can have aparoksha jnanam. It can be self-evident. But he says, not to Brahma, but not Brahman. Because Brahman doesn't have an upadi. Anupaditaha. This is an important argument. Because if Brahman doesn't have an upadi, then how can Brahman be known? This is the Swatta Siddha. How can Brahman be known if it doesn't have an upadi? The only way that the jiva can be known, the atma, the conscious being of the jiva can be known because it has an upadi. Brahman has no upadi. This is purva paksha. Brahman has no upadi. How can it be known then? And now think about it. We'll get into this in the next verse in a little bit. Think about it like this. Even on this level. Who gains knowledge? Brahman, we never say that Brahman needs to gain knowledge. The one who's ignorant needs to gain knowledge. It's the jiva. The jiva gains knowledge. The jiva is suffering from ignorance. It's the jiva that gains knowledge. The jiva is bound, and it's the jiva who is liberated. So this duality between bondage and liberation, between ajnanam and jnanam, all of this belongs to the jiva. Who is the jiva? Conscious being with the antakarana. Why do they say antakarana? Well, you can look at it like that because the physical body is pervaded by the five sense organs and the knowledge is actually taking place. The consciousness is reflected in the antakarana and the sukshma sharira. Sukshma sharira transmigrates, takes this physical body. And so in the sukshma sharira, in the subtle body, what is it that's really enjoying consciousness? Well, it's the antakarana, right, which is all sattva, and the five sense organs. That's the sattva. The sattva reflects consciousness. So if you say, who's the jiva? Well, the jiva is the antakarana, the mix of the consciousness and the antakarana. And then you add on all of the things from there. But it's the jiva with the atman, the consciousness with the antakarana, that can know. Right? Without the antakarana, without the mind, you can't know anything. You can't gain knowledge. You require the antakarana, at least, to gain knowledge. And so, that being so, it's only going to be the jiva, that it's only going to be the jiva that that can be a paroksha, that this word is even going to apply to, because it has an upadhi. It can say, I am a paroksha. Okay? I am self-evident. Brahman can't say that. Right? That's the objection. That's as far as this guy goes, but it has to be answered. Okay? Naivam brahmatva bodhasya. Naivam brahmatva bodhasya. Sopadi vishyatvataha. Sopadi vishyatvataha. Yavat videha kaivalyam. Yavat videha kaivalyam. Upadheranivaranat. Upadheranivaranat. Na evam. Brahmatva bodhasya. Sopadi vishyatvataha. It's really sa upadi, but it's a compound. Sopadi vishyatvataha. Yavat videha kaivalyam upadehe anivaranat. He says, na evam, no, it's not like that. Na evam, no, not like that. Brahmatva bodhasya, for the knowledge of Brahman, for the knowledge of being Brahman, knowledge of being Brahman and I am Brahman, for the knowledge of the Brahmatva. The Brahmatva means the state of being Brahman. For who? For the Atma. So the knowledge of the Brahmatva, that state of being Brahman, I could just say for the knowledge of being Brahman, sa upadi vishyatva sattaha. He says, because of the knowledge of being Brahman, because of the knowledge of being Brahman, being the vishya, the subject matter of that which has an upadhi. Okay? So, no, not like that. Why isn't it like that? Because the vishaya of the knowledge of the brahmatva, the subject matter, has to be for the upadhi, for that which has the upadhi. So, there's some little technical, let me explain it. The word vishaya means the subject matter. It means just subject matter, like the subject matter of a book. But it also means the object of a perception. Like, for instance, my eyes see this lamp. This lamp is a vishya. It's an object of my perception. My hands feel this chair. I'm feeling this chair. The chair that I'm feeling is a vishya for the sense of touch. And so what is the subject, what is the thing which the sense organ or the means of knowledge is knowing? So what is it that, like say if I gain atmajnanam, for instance, what is the vishya of the atmajnanam? What is the substance, what is the thing which is being known, right? And so here for knowledge of Brahman, who is gaining the knowledge of Brahman, right? That knowledge of Brahman takes place in an upadhi, in that it is the vishya of the upadhi. Okay? It's the vishya of the antakarna. Okay, so now, let me explain. Right now, for jnani or ajnani, the truth, the self, the aparoksha atma, the self-evident self, is the content of the antakarna, just of the mind. Yourself is the very substance of the mind. Whether you have knowledge or not, that doesn't make any difference. The stuff of the mind is the self. In other words, when I say, I am my mind, or I am this thought, that's because I, the Atma, is pervasive to the thought, kind of like the red hot iron ball. And so I am, in fact, the very being of the mind. Everybody with me on that? Okay, so now, the problem is that this mind has ignorance, self-ignorance. And because it has self-ignorance, it doesn't have any type of objectification, vishyatvam, of the Atma, right? The Atma is there, yourself is there, experientially, as the very being of the mind. But the mind doesn't have the self as its vishya, as its object of knowledge. See that? It only takes the self to be itself, so it doesn't even think about it. It doesn't make any differentiation at all. Now what happens is that when knowledge takes place, this mind that had been totally identified with the self, this anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition, it had taken itself to be the self, you know, and the self was it. It's gone both ways. Now what happens is that there's a differentiation that takes place, and the Atma becomes the vishya for the mind. When that happens, there's been a differentiation. And it's when the Atma is differentiated like that from the mind, and if you say from the mind, from the sense organs, from the physical, because it's differentiated from the mind, right? It's not going to be an object of perception. So now the Atma is free. It's free from the ahankar, because differentiated. It's free from the sense, in terms of its own swarupa. It's free in terms of its own swarupa. It's not in the form of the ahankara. That the ahankara is just a thought. It's the self is not in the form of the mind. It doesn't have the mind for its swarupa. It's not in the form of the body. It's not in the form of a perception. So all of these, this mitya, all of these nama rupas that had been identified, names and forms that had been identified with the self, that self is freed from. And it goes further. The self is now being freed from all of these things. Itself is not an object of perception. It's swetta siddha. It's self-evident, right? Because it is the consciousness that the mind itself has recognized as independent. Right? Consciousness itself is independent of the mind, even though the mind is totally dependent on it. It recognizes that the consciousness is not dependent on the mind, but that the mind, my mind, is totally dependent on consciousness. But my consciousness is totally independent of the mind. That means that the conscious being that you are becomes the vishya for the upadhi, the one who has the upadhi, the mind. Because this individual here is the one gaining self-knowledge. Consciousness isn't gaining self-knowledge. Limitless consciousness isn't gaining self-knowledge. It's not becoming enlightened. It's not becoming liberated. It's not becoming freed from ignorance. It is already all of those things. That's its very swarupa. The problem exists in the mind. So he says, because it being a vishya, then he says, as long as, up until, yavat means until, videha kaivalyam, until one drops the body, is without a body, when the prarabdha is over and the body drops, that's videha. Deha means body, videha, without the body, free of the body. So until one is free of the body, and is kaivalyam alone, means just consciousness. There's no upadhi there. So until the body is dropped, until that time, he says, upadehe anivaranat. There is no getting rid of, there's no negation, there's no dismissal of the upadhi. Right? This body, is body, mind, sense organs is going to be there. Right? Whether you're Brahman or not. Whether you, if you know yourself, aham brahmasmi, if you know I am Brahman, if you know that this Atma that I am is Brahman, the Upadhi is still here. If you think that this Atma is limited, is identified with the body, the Upadhi is still here. As long as you are living, the Upadhi is here. But that Upadhi in no way limits the Brahmatvam of the Atma. Atma, and this is another thing. This Atma that you are, this self-evident Atma, it is this self-evident Atma, this conscious being that you are, that is Brahman. It's not, doesn't become Brahman. It doesn't expand into Brahman. It doesn't resolve into Brahman. As it is Brahman. And so when you know yourself now as a jiva, so just think of, just as such an incredible, this is, it's incredible really. For jiva, for an ajnani, with no knowledge, the self-experience that you have as an ajnani, the self-experience that you have is Brahman. 100% total and complete. But it's Brahman plus ignorance. Right? Because the Brahman is, by the mind, identified with limited name and form. And since the mind, because of ignorance, is identifying your being, the Atma, with limited name and form, you become subject, your mind thinks, then it believes, that you are subject to the limitations of those names and forms, whether it be the mind, if it takes itself to, mind takes itself to be the self, then whatever problems the mind has, those are your problems, that's you. Mm-hmm. Right? Whatever lifespan or health or physical appearance that the body has, that's you. That's what the mind thinks. But the mind is dressing you. The mind is erroneously dressing Brahman, you, with all of these things. But were all of these things to disappear, what would be left? You, who are Brahman. It's not a you who has become Brahman, or a you who has expanded into Brahman. Because yourself, the conscious being that you are, isn't an object within time and space. Time and space is something that comes from you, is sustained by you, and goes, resolves into you. Yourself is not spatial. It has nothing to do with space, it has nothing to do with time. And so the infinity, when we say you are infinite, one without a second, we say you are infinite because there are no boundaries for you. There is nothing else. There is nothing else. You are the very truth of the whole creation. But that doesn't make you big or small. The instant you say big or small, you're within the creation. You're an object. You're this big. Say you're this big. You know, but then you're this big within space. So you're taking up space. So then there's other things. You're one of many. But what if there is no other thing other than just me, the meanness, the very being of yourself, the Atma? Then it's not about space. That's why sometimes it's really wonderful to think in meditation, to think, just be with me, your very being. And notice, you can have your mind ask itself, say, am I, referring to the Atma, myself, am I big or small? These words don't apply. You'll see. They have nothing to do with me. I'm not big, I'm not small, I have nothing to do with size. Am I a color? Am I blue or green or black or red? It's nothing to do with color. Yeah. Am I light or dark? Am I luminous like the sun? Or dark like the night. Nothing to do with it. Though we use the idea of luminosity because the sun allows us to see and awareness illumines everything. So it's as though it's bright. But if you're just sitting with yourself, it's not bright like the sun is bright and it's not dark like the night is dark. Right? It just simply is what it is, and there's nothing like it in the creation. It's the very self of the creation. And so this absolute wholeness, completeness of yourself is what needs to be recognized. because we have been conditioned to think of enlightenment as expansive. Expansive brings up spatial concepts. So it's not expansive and it's not contracted. These terms belong to space. But how do you know what I'm meaning here? Because it just can sound just like gibberish. But it isn't gibberish when you have the words, as lakshanas means pointers, are pointing to the reality of your own being. Then if you're looking at yourself, you'd say, oh yeah, well, yeah, that's right, I see what she means. But why? Because you're focused on your own, the conscious being that you are. Then those words work, right? Because they're pointing to the experiential, swatha siddha self-evident reality of your own presence, right? Now, that presence without the universe, without the physical body, just kaivalyam alone, right? Then there is not going to be any upadhi problem. That's why it says when the upadhi drops and there's just my own being there, right? This problem with upadhi that he was questioning, saying only a jiva that has an upadhi can know this aparoksha atma. So, well, when the upadhis are completely gone, then there'll be that kaivalya. Otherwise, there is no dismissing of the upadhi. You know, it's always going to be there until the upadhi is dead, until it drops off, until there is no more upadhi. But that in no way stops the upadhi from performing this act of differentiation to recognize the freedom of myself. The me, the self, abides as the atma. The mind itself, in a way, it kills itself. I don't really mean that exactly, but it's the mind that recognizes that it is not me. Right? It's not me. I don't recognize that. I remain me. The mind recognizes that it is mitya. And so in a way it loses itself. In a way, that's what it's afraid of. That's why it can really react and feel like it's going to die. But actually, in truth, nothing happens because the self has always been the self of the mind. It has never not been that. And so nothing happens because it's knowledge. Right? So nothing happens to the mind. It doesn't all of a sudden lose its selfhood. It never had its selfhood. At the same time, it is nothing but the self. Right? The mind is nothing but the self. But the self is not the mind. Right? That's what has to be, and that's the satyam nitya. That's the whole truth of it all. The universe is nothing but the self. This whole universe is nothing but the self. But I am not the universe. That's why the universe can come from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. It totally depends on me for its being, but I don't depend on it. It says when, you know, the upadhis are gone, then I'm just kaivalyam. Kaivalyam means one without a second. I'm just me, just the conscious being that I am. But that's videha. That's when the physical body is dropped off. Until then, you know, this upadhi is going to be there. So now he explains a little further. Antakarana sahitya, antakarana sahitya, rahitya bhyam vishishyate, rahitya bhyam vishishyate, upadir jiva bhavasya, upadir jiva bhavasya, brahmatayas chananyata, brahmatayas chananyata. Antakarana sahitya rahityabhyam vishishyate upadhir jiva bhavasya brahmatayaha cha na anyata. He tries to explain further. He says, antakarana, the mind, sahitya, with the mind, being accompanied by the mind, so with the antakarana, and rahitya, and being without the antakarana, being with the mind, and being without the mind, he says. Vishishyate upadihi. The upadi, the conditioning adjunct, the upadi, is differentiated, vishishyate, simply by being with the mind, by possessing the mind, and by not having the mind. Rahite means without. The upadi for the jiva bhava, the upadi for being a jiva, and the upadi for being Brahman, has only to do with being with the mind or being without the mind. Not anyata, not anything else. So you have to understand here, there's some interesting logic here. From the standpoint of vyavahara, you can make a distinction between something, and a conditioning adjunct is there, the mind is there. If the mind is there, so now the upadi is the mind, then we have the jiva, okay? Because the conscious being plus the mind, that's the jiva. Now, on the other hand, if the upadi is not there, then Brahman, okay? So, the state of being Brahman, Brahmataya, the Brahmata, the state of being Brahman, and the state of being the jiva, the only difference between the two is the upadi. Nothing else. If the upadi is there, right, the antakaran is there, then we have the state of the jiva. If the upadi is not there, then we have Brahman. There is no other difference at all. So in other words, the upadi creates the difference, nothing else. And so the antakarana, the existence of the antakarana, creates a difference from the standpoint of the antakarana. But what is the knowledge of the antakarana? Is aham brahmasmi, that this atma that I am, is limitless. So the antakarana itself has made a vishya, has made an object, in a sense, objectified from itself, differentiated from itself, the atma, the self. And then what does it recognize? Mm-hmm. Right? That the upadi is mitya. That the upadi is not my being. So now we have the mitya upadi and Brahman which has no upadi. Okay? So what does that mean? That this atma is Brahman. Because it can't be mitya. Mitya has no reality apart from the self or apart from what from it's true. And so here you make this differentiation between Brahman and the jiva based on what? Whether you're looking, whether you have an upadi or not. And that's all. There's no other difference. The idea here is that there is no difference between the jiva and Brahman. Right? Not in reality. There's only one self. If you say, look at how they say, jiva and Brahman, they're not even saying jiva and Ishwara. Jiva and Brahman. That means that what makes you a jiva? Only identification with the upadi, identification with the mind. The mind makes itself a jiva, right? The atma, the self that you are, has never been a jiva, will never be a jiva. There's no such thing as a jiva. The self that you are is Brahman. And so what makes Brahman a jiva is what you end up saying. What makes Brahman a jiva? Only the mind. The mind, and the mind means ignorance, with ignorance. Now, the thing is, because even a jnani, once a person has knowledge and you know yourself, you have aparoksha jnanam of yourself, you no longer, the antakarana no longer takes this swatta siddha, the self-evident being of myself, to be itself. It no longer takes that. And so I am shining freely. But even as a jnani, until the prarabdha runs out, I've got this body. I've got this antakarana. Right? It's not going to go away. It doesn't go away until the prarabdha is there. So this antakarana, does this antakarana in any way make me a jiva? You can say the jivatvam is bodhita. It's sublated. Because the antakarana and the body, all of these things go on existing until the prarabdha runs out. But they don't in any way, the existence of the mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, all of these things, they don't in any way change my being and the aparokshatva of my being. I've recognized the independence of my being. And so nothing, none of these upadis are going to change that. So the upadis, the antakarna, doesn't make me become less Brahman. And so now I've got the upadi, and so the experience of Brahman is muted. Right? Or the experience of Brahman isn't complete because the upadi is here. So no, there's nothing that ever, in fact, nothing ever covers the Brahmatvam, the nature of yourself in any way. And this is Advaita. This is why, you know, because everybody's searching for an experience. But the experience is already here, in full, not partially. So that's why, you know, Vedanta Advaita can be a little bit difficult, because especially as one is gaining Antakarna Shuddhi, right? As we're in the process of gaining Antakarna Shuddhi, gaining Vairagya, the mind, of course, causes it problems. It causes pain. And so that pain takes the attention. The mind's attention goes toward its pain, and then toward the cause of its pain. And it gets all entangled out here. And so when you're in pain, the mind doesn't feel inclined to say, you know, I am Brahman. But actually it will later. If it doesn't know, it will later. Because what you come to realize, to appreciate, is that no matter what the condition is, what the condition of the Maya, of this creation is, your being is not touched at all. The conscious being that you are is Swetha Siddha. You know, it's just like, they use example, like say, if I were to put a bag over my head, right? Now I've got a bag over my head, and so I can't see, you know? But I'm lighting up the darkness. But I'm still completely present. The self-experience is completely there, even though I've got a bag over my head. Right? Nothing happens. It's like the same thing. Say if you think, use this example. They use the example of a cloud, of a sun, the bright sun, being as though covered by a storm, stormy clouds. And so from this vantage point, it becomes kind of dark because the clouds are so dark. But if you are the sun, you're illuminating the clouds. Doesn't matter how dark they are. But the dark clouds are what are known, right? It's the same with your moods. The moods, whatever they are known. They're not covering me. They're just a bag over my head. I'm exactly the same. And so this is the differentiation that has to take place, where I recognize when your mind starts relaxing a little bit so that it doesn't have to deal with emotional pain. Mm-hmm. The Vairagya is there. It's kind of matured out of a lot of its problems. Knowledge helps so much with that. And then learning how to be with your mind, it helps so much with that. Then when the mind has a certain degree of shanti, just a peace of relaxation, then the pervasiveness or the freedom of your being is not in any way challenged or obstructed by things you don't like. Right? What don't we like? Well, we don't like the variety of forms of pain. Right? And so these experiences of pain don't become a distraction for the mind. But even when they are a distraction, as long as they're not overwhelming you, you know, there's something that just exists within the wholeness of yourself. So this is really a Advaita, one of the most important freeing recognitions is that no matter what the experience, I am still completely here as aparoksha, as self-evident. No matter what the experience, self-evident me is completely 100% here, not covered. You know? And that's what becomes challenging for people to understand, especially when their mind is upset because of the identification with the mind, they'll think, oh no. But there's that, oh no, that, you know, this couldn't be all there is. Then there's another problem. So that's identification with a mood in the mind. The other problem is wanting, looking for bliss vrittis, bliss modifications, thought modifications, to counteract the painful ones. Right? But actually, the bliss modification and the painful, this whole, all of these modifications, right, have me as their very being. And the one who is their very being is incomparable to the diversity in the creation, whether it be positive or negative. It's absolutely incomparable, even in terms of its desirability. There's no contest. It's apples and oranges. There's no relationship. There's nothing more whole than the self. And so this self needs to be recognized, with or without the upadhi, as being whole and complete. That this Atma that you are is wholly Brahman, not partially Brahman. It is wholly experienced Swatha Siddha as Brahman, not partially. There can't be any partial experience of something that doesn't exist in space. There's no such thing as partial. But if it doesn't exist in space, right? Partial would mean of this side or that side, or the front or the back. But front, back, this side, that side, that all involves space. The Atma, your being, doesn't involve space. There's no such thing as a partial self-experience. It is always whole and complete. In fact, it is whole and complete right now, even for an Ajnani who is identified with the body. The Brahmatvam of yourself, the self-evident experience, is whole and complete. Just the poor mind has misidentified these objects in the creation with it. That's all it is. So that has to be, that error has to be corrected with self-knowledge. Okay. So. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
So this sense of non-dualness, you never seek it or try to experience it. It's already me. And that me is all that there is.
Well, it's the very substance of everything, but you don't even have to worry about that, really, as long as you just recognize your being. Then the mitta-tva of all of this, you have to understand.
Oh, because it's real, and this will take care of itself.
Well, it takes care of itself once it's Ishvara. Right? If this all takes care of itself, if you understand that it's Ishvara. Right, if you think that it's something separate from you, like an inert creation, then you have to make your way and make yourself happy and make yourself complete, right, then it hardly takes care of itself. It does take care of itself, but not according to us. But if you see it as Ishvara, then it is taking care of itself very well, and you're participating in it, but with a different sense, more of a sense of appreciation and wonder, you know, and then doing your part. Whatever your prarabdha is, you're doing your part to the best of your ability. That's what Swamiji, I mean, I'll never forget when Swamiji said it was so simple. He said, I just do the best I can every day with whatever's there to do. Doesn't even think about it. That's just what it is. What the universe is presenting, it's Ishvara. It's almost like a puja in one way for people who are more bhakti-oriented. If you see all of this as Ishvara, as the Lord, then whatever is happening is only Ishvara, right? And so you as a jiva in this are just in relationship to Ishvara all of the time. So that's a nice kind of meditation to recognize. So, but it's not, well, from that vantage point, there's a certain trust there. There's a trust in Ishvara, a trust in your prarabdha, a trust that you'll get what is yours. What is yours will come to you. That's the karma. What is not, I find this very helpful too. What is yours you'll get. What isn't yours you won't get, so don't worry about it. What is yours, what is meant for you, for the very reason you took this birth, what this particular lifetime embodiment is for, all of those things will come to you. And the things that aren't meant for you, they won't come to you. So then, for us then, in having the shanti, it really is a matter of attitude. It's not a matter so much of what is happening. There's never going to be a time from your birth to death that things aren't happening. Right? Life happens. You know, life is happening, no matter what. The whole thing is, how are you with the life that is happening? How do you hold it? How are you with the mind that is happening? Because we do have a mind prior to knowledge. And that mind has been hurt and traumatized and rebuffed and all kinds of horrible things. You know, so that mind needs to go to the hospital for a while. A sanitarium. We need to provide an inner sanitarium for the mind so that it can recuperate from samsara. It needs a few years of, you know, recuperation.
R&R.
Yeah. Big time R&R. Need to be waited on and loved. And I said, you did a good job. It's for lifetimes. How did you do it, my God? Good. Let alone this lifetime. Yeah. I can't believe how detailed this text is. I haven't studied it for a long time. And last time I taught it, I didn't get this far. Because it's such a long text. I think I've only got 60 or 70 verses. So I haven't really looked at these verses for a long time. It's amazing. Yeah. You can see how thorough Vedanta is. Mm. They don't leave anything. Mm-hmm. I remember in India when Swamiji was teaching this, I must have been in my 20s, yeah, the first time. I heard him teach it two or three times, not recently. I remember being just overwhelmed with kind of with wonder and joy, really, to see that how much analysis. There was nothing unturned. If I thought of it, there it would be. That'd be the next verse. And went on and on and on like that.
Well, that builds a real confidence because you can always count on the text to be there.
Yeah, it's so pleasing to the mind.
Yeah.
So pleasing because the mind loves to understand. It gives peace to the mind when it understands.
Silly question. Feels like a silly question. But it keeps coming up over and over again, like, okay, here I am, me. And here you are, me. Me and me and me and me. And, you know, there's something very, like, so we are all Brahman. But, yeah, so here's the silly part. But we're also different.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're experiencing me, are you experiencing me like I'm experiencing me? And if you aren't, then...
No, it's like this. No, that's right. This is the important. That's when we go through this process of objectifying the things that make us different. In other words, our bodies are different, and there's space between us, too. But from the standpoint of the Atma and the Self, your body is an object that you're aware of through your sense organs, right? And so is mine. My body is also an object. So the bodies aren't the nature of the self, right? So your body is different from my body, but my body's not me and your body's not you, right? So we'll get rid of the bodies. There's no difference there. And you go in, the difference in bodies don't make me different from you. They make the bodies different from the body. Same with the sense organs. The sense organs are, mine are known to me through my mind, and yours are known to you. Right? So those differences, that your eyes are different than my eyes, that doesn't matter because I'm not my eyes, you're not your eyes. Mind is the same. I have different thoughts than you do, and my thoughts are different one after another, and your thoughts are different, but your mind is known to you. It's an object. Objectified, mine is an object. So the different minds don't make us different. Because say the ahankar, what about I am, the I am thought? But I have an I am thought too. Both are known. You know your I am thought, I know my I am thought. So that doesn't make us different. What about space? Well, you could say, well, there's still space. But space also is known, objectified. Right? So now if you start looking, all of these things are objectified. They all belong to the creation. What about the me, the conscious being? Now, what is to separate your conscious me from my conscious me? It's not going to be the bodies. It won't be the sense organs. It won't be the minds. It won't be the eye thoughts. It won't even be space. So where's the dividing line between this me experience? So the me experience, well, I say experience means self-evident. There is only one such experience. There's only one me. That's why sometimes we use the dream illustration, because we can see how that could be. If there's one self, and from that self, the dream comes, is sustained, and goes back. When the dream is there, all of the characters are all saying, me, 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 me. But when the dream goes away, there's just one me. Right? And so that's where the identity is, that there's... Now, if you're looking through your eyes, right, then you are seeing there's space here and there's difference. You can't see awareness. You are awareness. But awareness isn't going to be like an object that you're looking at. But the awareness that you are, which is not objectifiable, is not something that's away from anything that you're looking at. It's not itself an object, but there's nothing away from it. And so once I understand that, then even though I'm looking at you and I see your body and your eyes and our conversation and all of that, I know that you are me. In other words, you're me. The me that you are is me. It's not somebody else. The minds are different, though. So within this creation, there's all this duality. But I know intimately who you are, because your me is me. There's only one me. Right? So it's not as though we are having separate experiences of me, even. There's not separate experiences of me. The me experience belongs to me. The me experience is the self experience. The mind isn't giving the me experience. The mind isn't responsible for the me experience. Then you say, well, your mind is having an experience of me. My mind is having an experience of me. Your mind is having an experience of me. No, the experience of me is the self. That is the nature of consciousness, is the me experience. So when you get rid of, say, just hypothetically, get rid of the whole universe, everything that exists within time and space, the whole duality, let it, like a dream, let it just disappear. What is left? The me experience. The whole creation comes again. Then what is there? Pervasive to the whole creation? The me experience. The me, the self, is the very truth of the whole thing. So what do we say is Ishvara? Is there's no identification with any antakarana. There's no identification with any object within the creation. And so the entire creation is like an infinite antakarana, like an infinite, the Maya Upadhi itself, the entire thing reflects consciousness. But there's no identification with any part of it. So it's the whole. That's what we mean by Ishvara, the infinite manifest knowledge. That is enjoined, that I am the self of. Right, so this me is the me of Ishvara. It's the only me there is. And it's not given, the me is not, the self is not something which is being experienced by something else. It itself is the experience which all things enjoy, which all subtle bodies enjoy it, I. And the whole universe enjoys it from the standpoint of Ishvara as the whole thing is known. Right? Pretty nice. Mm-hmm. I said pretty nice. Yeah. You see?
Yeah.
Kind of?
Yeah, I think... on some level, I keep getting confused.
Yeah, oh, I know, because the body, mind, sense organs has had infinite, beginningless lifetimes of being a knower, an individual within this creation.
Right.
You know? And so we have to see this from many, many different ways. And that's why I wrote, no question is stupid, because you could even ask the same question, you know, several iterations from now. And it'll be just answering it, but a little it'll be answering something different for you. That's how it is. You keep seeing the same thing over and over from different vantage points.
Well, you used to speak like that. You know, the weeds part.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
See it and boom, close again. It's like, it can be so clear, then we'll have one thought that will go like, that simply we go like, well, not me. And
yeah.
It hurts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a few of those, thoughts that have to be tended.
It's an age-long habit, I think, of thinking that way.
Yeah, but those are the ones that need the attention.
Because
90% or 95% of your thoughts are fine. They just come and go. They don't create any problem. You know, they might stay with you for a while. You might play with them for a while and just dismiss them. No problem. Maybe even 99%.
Yeah.
But then there's...
that one,
yeah, that handful, one or two, and those
like
require, those are your babies. Those are the ones that need to be cradled and understood, you know, be patient with, help. Yeah.
Also seems to be the thought that we don't know what to do without it, you know?
Without the baby? Without the painful thought?
Yeah, and we don't know who it is anymore. Do you know what I mean? That's such a habit.
Yeah,
of life.
But but you know how it really works? Is that thought drops off, and then one day you realize, wow, I haven't had that thought for a long time. You know, that's how as you grow out of things, all of a sudden they're just not bothering you anymore, and then you remember. Because that's how it is. At some point, it doesn't come around, and then you think, wow, that thought doesn't come around anymore. That doesn't, you're not bothered in that way. You know? So that thought doesn't have to worry about that. It'll just quietly go away. Quietly transform.
Yeah, it's been cared for. It doesn't need to take havoc anymore.
Yeah, it actually I think it really kind of, and it's going away, really what's happening is it's just transforming back into the shanti of your mind. You know? If you think of an ocean that's stormy, and then the storm settles, and then it's just back to the shanti of the mind, and that mind doesn't throw itself up into a storm in that way anymore.
I notice that sometimes I notice this, like, almost in retrospect, it's kind of like, oh, previously I would have reacted like that, and now I don't.
Yeah, it's in retrospect.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You see, you're not doing that anymore.
Not the charge.
You remember.
Yeah, it smells like, oh, here we go again.
you're still reacting in the way that you were, then you have more space. So. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that experience the other day. I had to go to this big party, and I always hated big parties. It made me totally self-conscious, didn't know what to do in them.
Yeah.
And I was dreading going, actually, thinking, oh, this is going to be such a drag, but I have to do it. And then I went, and actually I felt completely, totally relaxed. I said, well, how did that happen?
I'm not a character.
Completely at ease there.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Yeah.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
I think that's like something you said, Ed, about it sort of takes care of itself or something. I think there is some way it feels like things are kind of taking care of themselves in that way, you know? There's something about just being exposed to the knowledge, even if you're not really like feeling like, I've really gotten it completely, that just changes things.
It changes things. Yeah. Knowledge changes things, you know, because knowledge changes the way you relate to things. And when that changes, if it's changing in a positive way, your mind just enjoys much more peace, just much more relaxed, because you're understanding things in a way that allows for that. You know, you feel comfortable.
Yeah, we can all go to the party now.
Yeah.
Hang out,
I'm not going to go to the party.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, this idea of you get what you're together, you don't get what you're not supposed to get. That's
probably, yeah.
That's takes some shaking too, because you think you have to create what you get, or you have to grab it.
I know, that's true. I mean, that's a really a wonderful one to understand, because it allows you to relax and to just be appreciate Ishvara. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it helps too if you look in hindsight. Look at the life up till now, and just with interest. Look at the life up till now with interest, and how it's unfolded, what has happened in your life, and just see the story. See your own story, you know, and know that this story is going, and there'll be good things and bad things in it. Sometimes you can even, if you look at the story of your life, on one side it looks wonderful, on the other side it looks like hell. It's like the two are intertwined together, but there's a story. You know, there's sort of like a plot in a way, that, and it keeps on going. You can become interested in it and know this is your story, right? Your little, that little area of Ishvara.
You're the hero of your own story.
Yeah.
Center stage.
Yeah.
It also goes to the opposite. You know, it's like Edward said, you grasp the things. There's also the part you reject what you've been given.
Both, yeah. That's why this pravritti nivritti. You know, the raga dvesha, you go toward these things and you go away. If you think they get painful, then it's rejection. If you think that it's helpful, then it's going toward. And even animals are like that. If you hold the animal some grass, like a cow, a big thing of grass, it'll come. If you have a stick, it'll run. We go toward what we think will make us happy. And we run away from and are anxious about and hate things that have caused us pain.
But that's, I think, at least for myself recently, like if I project into the future, you know, and I get like, oh, you know, and then I think, and I do try to have vairagya around that, you know, and just like what's important, you know, to like just sort of stay home, you know, rather than going out with these projections into the future that you don't know what's going to be anyway. know. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And especially when you have a strong desire for something, you know, then you have to, if you can see, you're looking into the future and you can see how that cannot happen. Something can stop you from fulfilling something that's really important to you. Then you, it's called catastrophic thinking, you know, because you see the possibility. Right? So then you have to, you have to pull back. You have to pull your mind back in and kind of know that you will get what is yours and what is, and then you start thinking, well, what is it? It's me as a person. What is most important? What do I really value? And then you can say, well, let's see how Ishwara takes care of that. You know, especially if you're a seeker. You know, it's Ishwara's job. He has to take care of that for all of us. Fulfilling that for once a person comes to this knowledge. That's kind of the promise in the tradition. And then you can say, well, how are you going to manage this? And then be interested to see. And the universe is, as Ishwara, is capable of anything. Really. Anything and everything. So.
And you always have yourself, too. I mean, like you have to sort of know, like, you're always there.
You're always there, and you're always within the setting of your prarabdha, which is right where you belong. Right where you, as you're in total, you're meant to be. Right? So it's your place. You know?
In a lifetime, though, there's a lot of things that can take place, like in my life, you know, and come to this teaching until maybe my 20s or so, but even my young 20s, it's like there's just a period of naivety in my life. You know, so naive about so many things.
Me too. I was a wild also. Wild, I mean, I had lots of experiences, let's put it that way.
But thinking that Ishwara will kind of give you what you deserve or what you need. You know, when Arjuna got the vision of Ishwara, he just panicked. He couldn't manage all the births and the deaths and the...
Well, I mean, just imagine it. Here you are, you know, and Krishna comes and you say, gee, to the bubble, and you say, I'd really like to see what you see.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you have absolute infinity. And the infinite manifestation. The infinite manifestation is not going to be like what we see, this body with our little eyes and stuff. It's the infinite creation. And everything in motion, oh, just be astounding from the standpoint of the jiva. Yeah.
Well, it was frightening for him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He asked him to stop.
Yeah, he said, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Come back.
Stop.
Yeah, stop it. Yeah.
But, I mean, we shouldn't expect to see that happen. I mean...
Not from the standpoint of a jiva upadhi. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you recognize this is Ishwara. You know, there's nothing, this whole thing is Ishwara, then you can just logically extend it, but this is our piece of it.
But I meant to be cared for or, you know, looked after.
But you are looked after, but it may not be. You'll still die, you'll still get sick. It's just part of the upadhi. You know, but you are cared for and looked after. It's just you may have decided that you want to be cared for and looked after in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that you have to reel back in and start appreciating the way you are cared for and looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And how really special it is, how sacred it is. Mm-hmm. So you have to bring your mind back to you, to your life. Mm-hmm. Not Atma is another thing, but I mean bring yourself back to your life and realizing the uniqueness of your life and what it is. And honor it for what it is. Because yeah, each one of us, we each have a unique life that is part of Ishwara.
Yeah.